You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. This is our latest look at the Cleveland Indians. And I'm joined by Jordan Bastion. You've made it through, buddy. It's the end of spring training camp, a long camp it was. And yet, as we record this, it's still not decided exactly what the opening day roster is going to look like. And then I don't know who first used the word disjointed around Terry Francona, but it seems like it very quickly became his favorite word. Like in every interview, he squeezes it in there somewhere. And the disjointedness of this camp, you know, between the WBC and some minor bumps and bruises, that continued with Lonnie Chisenhall's injury. Right. That will keep him off the opening day roster. And I feel like it's important to point out to people that DL is now 10 days instead of 15. It's just kind of a hard mental adjustment for all of us, but doesn't seem like a long-term thing with Chisenhall, but that just kind of shakes up the outfield even more, which it was already a question of whether Michael Brantley's going to be an opening day lineup if his shoulder, you know, will allow him to be ready for that. So just give me the outlook for the outfield here in the last few days.
Yeah, and you were right, man. It's like we have been programmed for so long to write 15-day DL. Like you almost have to just like retrain our brains. It's a 10-day DL now. And actually, I love it. You know, I think there's a lot of these injuries that come up either at the end of spring or during the season where, you know, a team, you know, really, you know, sometimes hates having to burn a guy for 2 weeks. So the fact that the 10-day DL sort of eliminates, you know, that dilemma, you know, it helps. And I think in the case of Chisenhall specifically, it helps because they don't feel that this is a long-term issue for him. But it came up late in camp where he slammed into that wall and needed to get some days off to rest and recover, where he wasn't going to be able to get into games and get enough at-bats to just feel comfortable to break camp with the team, you know, that same type of rhythm that the other guys have. So what they're going to be able to do is, you know, backdate it in a way where he can then be eligible to be activated as long as he's feeling fine in time for the first homestand of the season. So it's really not that long. But what it did is it opened the door for Abraham Almonte to make the team, you know, a guy who can play all three outfield spots, switch hits, you know, has worked really hard on his right-handed hitting, and, you know, a guy who can be mixed and matched if Brantley's on the opening day roster. You know, maybe if Brantley needs a day off, Almonte can play. You know, maybe Almonte pairs with Brandon Guyer in right field in a pseudo platoon out of the gates. You know, there's a lot of different ways that they can utilize Almonte, and then he has a minor league option remaining. So if Brantley's on the roster and Chisenhall's ready to come back, you know, you have an easy solution there for, you know, sending the guy back down without fear of losing that layer of depth.
Yeah, and as I alluded to earlier, I mean, this what we're discussing here could be outdated very quickly if they, yeah, you know, make their decisions in the time between when we record this and when people actually hear it. But whether or not Michael Brantley is on the opening day roster, which, you know, his increase in just, you know, days in a row and that sort of thing, it certainly leads you to believe that's a good possibility. But whether or not he is, you know, his progression this spring has been a true highlight of this camp. And just the way he looks, the way he sounds, his body language to go with the body itself, these are all really encouraging things. I know these are things we talked about a year ago, but it seems like it's a really good situation there. He's shown some power. And so far he's shown some durability.
Yeah, and we did discuss these similar things a year ago, but in a much smaller burst. Like, right, it was, he worked into the game, he hit a home run, everyone got excited, and then he quickly was shut down again. So it wasn't a prolonged sense of optimism for Brantley. It was like optimism early in camp, and then it quickly became, all right, here we go again. And then it went on through the whole season. So we haven't had a setback yet for him as far as following this, and I think that's been what's been really encouraging. The big issue, as we stated so many times early in camp, we talked about this, was when he got into games and played multiple games in a row, how he was bouncing back. He's bounced back fine. You know, he's ending camp with three games in a row, and I believe it's his third stretch of multiple games in a row, and he had no setbacks throughout any of those series of games. And if anything, it looks like he's getting stronger at the plate. You know, hit his second home run the other day. He's hitting, I believe, a touch under 400 in the seven games that he's played. So it's more now, I think, from the Indians' perspective, less about is he physically ready right now and more about managing the volume? Is he ready for the entirety of a 162-game season? You know, opening day, it's fun and it's going to be awesome if he's on that roster, but they're not just thinking about that first road trip. They're thinking about 6 months, 7 months. You know, a player who is fully healthy will get fatigued throughout the course of a season, let alone a guy who's coming back from the complicated injury that he's coming back from. So that's sort of what they have to weigh, is the volume of at-bats and the consecutive days that he's gotten here towards the second half of spring training, and balancing what they've seen in the feedback and how he's feeling, how he's acting with, will that translate into keeping him on the field for the long term over a long season? That's what they'll be balancing, and that'll play a huge role in the decisions and discussions that they have behind the scenes.
Yeah, and you saw them, doing that balancing act with Jason Kipnis as well, just in terms of seems to be the mindset of we'd rather have five really good months of Jason Kipnis than 5.5 or 6 months where he's potentially fighting through some things. It seems like slow playing that made a lot of sense. But, of course, that opened the door to a lot of questions about how the infield shakes out early in the year. And, again, this is another one where maybe we know what the roster construction is by the time people listen to this. But no matter what happens, I think this will be remembered as the spring of Yandy. Yandy Diaz just absolutely torched the Cactus League. And it's one of those things where you can just see them doing everything in their power to kind of tame down the hype and expectations, and to point out, here's a guy who's bounced around a lot in his professional career, so he hasn't been nailed down to any one particular position, so he has defensive strides to make. And, oh, by the way, he's not on the 40-man roster. And the service time situation, all those things play into the decision they make. But, what's been your takeaway from the Yandy Diaz experience here?
Yeah, I think Kipnis' timetable plays a big role in this. If we were sitting here and Kipnis, if the Indians knew Kipnis is going to be gone for the first half or Kipnis is going to miss the year, then I think Yandy Diaz is the guy, because they know they can throw him out there, and he's shown them that he's a good enough hitter that it would translate, potentially to the major league level. But they're talking about a short-term situation here, so there's a lot more factors that the Indians need to weigh, as you mentioned. Is he on the roster? No, he's not. Giovanni Urshela is on the roster. If it's a short-term thing with Kipnis, as they think it's going to be, do they want to value run prevention and trustworthy defense? Well, there's no denying whether or not Diaz is a capable third baseman, he's just not at the level that Giovanni Urshela is, and Urshela's on the roster. Offensively, Diaz has the edge there. There's a lot of things to weigh in this decision. He hasn't had the reps at third base because they've bounced him around in accordance with major league need. Last year, when they were considering bringing him up for down the stretch, they were in need of outfielders. Michael Brantley was out, and they were rotating lots of guys in the outfield and in platoon situations. They tried to work him out in the outfield in the minors and just didn't get to a point where they were comfortable with where he was defensively there. That transition continued this spring, because Jose Ramirez is the third baseman. He's not going anywhere. He just signed a long-term contract. Then the Kipnis injury comes up, and now all of a sudden you have a hole at third. So now it's like I've kind of compared it to a kid cramming for a test. Hey, Yandy, go back to third base. We might need you there. And he's been, to his credit, doing a lot of work in the mornings with Mike Sarbaugh. They even did one specific workout where they had right-handed hitters hitting live pitching up the third baseline to him, because you put him out in a spring training game, you can't guarantee that he's going to get tested. They want to see him get tested defensively. So they've really tried to do a lot of scenarios and a lot of homework to get as much information as they can, because, as you mentioned, this guy's hitting over 400, and there's no denying that he's offensively capable of going to the big leagues. So lots of factors involved in this decision. It's not as simple as, Yandy Diaz had an incredible spring, had a great spring batting average, so he deserves the spot. So many factors in play, and it's going to be really interesting to see which direction they go here.
How do we go from Carlos Carrasco? They might take advantage of the early April off days and slow play Carlos Carrasco, to Carlos Carrasco is starting game two of the season.
Yeah.
that obviously speaks to it not being a severe situation with the elbow, despite the panic that sets in when you hear the word elbow associated with such a premier pitcher. But take us through that situation.
Yeah, I think at the point where that seemed like a realistic scenario where he could maybe start on the DL, they could carry an eighth reliever, you know, with the off days, they didn't need a fifth starter till April 15th. It all made sense that that could be a direction that they went. But I think at that point, when that seemed realistic, they weren't sure if they were going to be able to get him stretched out to the point where they wanted him to be stretched out. So since we discussed that, you know, he was able to get up to four innings, go back out to the bullpen, log some more pitches, and now they're comfortable with the idea that he can take the ball in game two, give them the equivalent of five innings, maybe around 85 pitches, and with what they've seen from him, you know, they're pretty comfortable with going that route now. So they're going to slot him in at number two as expected, go with the five-man rotation of Kluber, Carrasco, Salazar, Tomlin, and Bauer in the five spot, and go with them in order. You know, that way it works in some built-in days off for them rather than skipping a guy and things like that. So, again, I think at the time it was this fear over him not being able to get stretched out enough, and now as they get closer to opening day, they have become comfortable with the idea that he's stretched out far enough, at least for the beginning of April.
All right, a very highly anticipated 2017 season for the Cleveland Indians begins Monday night in Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas, including the expectations for this club. So Jordan Bash will be all over it for MLB.com. And as a special treat, he recently sat down with manager Terry Francona for an exclusive Q&A. If you listen closely, maybe you'll hear the word disjointed. I'm not sure if it's in there or not, but it just might sneak its way in there. Here we go with that conversation.
This is Jordan Bashna, MLB.com. I'm here with Terry Francona, manager of the Indians. And Terry, as we look ahead to opening day here, you know, obviously you guys reached the World Series last year and had a pretty tough loss in Game 7, but there's many ways a team can react to that when they come to spring training. Just what have you seen in this group in terms of how they've responded and how they're sort of dealing with the expectations of the year ahead?
I think just like we thought they would, they show up every day and they try to get better. I would have been surprised if it would have been different. This is one of the, anybody that's been around me for 10 minutes knows how much I enjoy working with this group. And, you know, there's going to be a lot that happens during this year. We know that. You know, to get to October where it's kind of glamorous, there's a lot that goes on to get there. And I think our guys are aware of that, and we've reminded them a time or two. But, you know, I think things have gone just like we thought, because it's been a little disjointed, you know, with the WBC and things like that, but nobody's questioning their work.
Now, last year we saw over the last 2 months what the bullpen looked like with Andrew Miller. You know, the idea that you're going to have him now for a full season and the addition of Boone Logan, you know, how can that help the way you can manage this bullpen?
Well, when it's going to be significantly help us. It's going to make it a little bit easier on, like, Shaw, Otero. But it's going to give us also, on certain days, matchup where hopefully we can give the opposing team some trouble. You know, when you have one lefty, you got to pick a spot, and then they're in the game, or you're going to wear them out. This way, you have the ability to have two where you don't just lean on one guy and just wear them out.
Right.
But they're both, you know, Andrew's been, you know, it's well documented how tough he is on lefties and righties. And Boone has really been tough on lefties.
With the addition of Edwin Encarnacion, just what did you, first of all, think of the ownership's sort of willingness to go out and get a guy like that? And then also, you know, how do you feel about how this is going to impact your lineup?
Well, you're right. It doesn't happen unless Paul kind of okays, you know, to extend, which we really appreciate. And, you know, if healthy, and he looks healthy, he's one of the few guys in the league where you can put it in pen, you can put it in ink, you know, because he's going to drive in those runs. He's just that's what he does. And he plays almost every game, and he can anchor a lineup, and it's going to be really good. Because Napoli was so important to us, and Edwin will be maybe in different areas, but his bat is as potent as there is.
And when you look at the spring, there have been some injury issues. You know, Kipnis has dealt with the shoulder. Brantley's still working on his comeback. Even Carlos Carrasco had a little bit of a setback. But when you look at last season, you know, there were also issues that you guys had to overcome. With this group here, how confident are you that when things of this nature come up, you know, they kind of really have that next man up mentality?
Yeah, and I think because they've done it before, you know, we said the first day of spring training, things are going to happen. We know it's not realistic that they won't. So, you get yourself ready, and we'll try to make the best decisions we can to put our team in the best position, and then we'll go play, and we'll never use that for an excuse to lose a game, because I don't think we believe in that. But I also think we're deep enough where we should be able to handle it.
This spring, you know, it's been two springs of this, going, you know, watching Michael Brantley come back. How has it felt this spring compared to a year ago, with just watching his demeanor behind the scenes and his swing, you know, in the games?
You know, it's easy to forget what happened, you know, because you move on. Because I was pretty upbeat last year, I remember, and I really, because he did such a good job. It's hard not to when you're around him. I do think now, from experience and looking at him and his body language and how he's carrying himself, he's pretty upbeat. So when he feels like that, probably makes us feel a little bit better.
This spring, and largely because of the World Baseball Classic, it allowed you to get a longer look at some of the prospects, guys like Greg Allen, Brad Zimmer, Yandy Diaz, and, you know, whether they're on the roster or they make an impact later on, you know, or in the future, just how much fun was it to kind of get some eyes and time, you know, with these players?
You know, usually the guys you're just referring to, they may get a handful of at-bats, you know, 10. But because of the WBC, I think Zim and Yandy and Greg Allen all had over 40, and two of them are still here. So it's been really good for them, because even though when spring training's in the rearview mirror, nobody will remember what they hit, every game experience, every at-bat is a learning experience for them, and they're going to grow from it.
Terry, thanks for doing this. For Terry Francona, I'm Jordan Bastian, MLB.com.
Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovince, and this is our latest look at Chicago White Sox with Scott Merkin, who's still mourning the loss of Michigan to Oregon in the Elite Eight. I'm sorry about that, Merk. They fought the good fight, and they'll live to see another day in 2017, 2018.
He said, I can't believe Walton's shot didn't go down. I said, but only one team ends up as a champion, so, you know, you got to go from there.
It's true. We don't expect the White Sox to be champions this year. This is a developmental year. It's all about some young players taking a step forward, and that's why it's a little uncomfortable when you heard about Carlos Rodon's biceps tightness. When I saw you last week, he pitched so well against the Angels, but thankfully it doesn't sound like it's anything structural. What's the latest on Rodon's status?
Well, as we're taping this, we've not heard yet from Rodon about the results, and he had examination in LA on Monday, and they're waiting for the results from that. But from everything it sounds like, and you know, the MRI was clean, it sounds like it's just muscular, and it may just take a little bit of time, you know, tightness up there, may take a little bit of time to work out. And you know, he's going to start on the DL whether they've said it or not yet. It's not a year where you're planning on contending from start to finish, so if it takes a little while longer, you're here on the side of caution.
And another White Sox news, a trade was made, Merk, but it wasn't the blockbuster some people might hope for or expect with Jose Quintana. They traded Peter Borges to the Rays. What went behind that deal?
Well, I think it's more a case of, you know, opening up a spot for Jacob May to play every day. Jacob May has been great during camp. Switch hitter, certainly a major league ready defensive player, major league ready base runner. The only, you know, thing that was kind of, I don't want to say in the way, but holding up was offensively, and he seems to have shown that fine during spring training. You know, I think one of the things that's great about him is he kind of understands his game. You know, he'll lay down a bunt, he can hit behind the runner. He's not looking to swing for the fence every time, but he does have a little pop too. So, you know, he doesn't have a ton of experience past AAA because of injuries, but I think he really earned that spot. And that's nothing against Peter Borges, whose scouts, you know, raved to me about how great he was defensively during spring training. But he's going to, you know, pretend, the Rays wouldn't like that, to be a contender. So it's a good move for him. And I know he one of the reasons Borges picked the Sox, you know, to come on with was his young kids, and his family lives in Arizona. So at least he got to go through the entire spring training in his home and then got traded off. But this is, you know, I'm not sure what the player to be named later or the money is going to be, but this is all about really getting a spot open for Jacob May to become the White Sox center fielder for the time being.
What else is left to be decided in camp, Merk?
Well, you know, I mean, you're going to put a couple guys in the DL. Charlie Tilson's, you know, right foot stress reaction, which is what opened up kind of the opportunity for Jacob May. So he'll go on the DL. Rodon will go on the DL. I think without them saying anything, it seems like it's pretty well set. It looks like Michael Anoa and Anthony Swarzak are going to be the last two relievers. It looks like Dylan Covey is going to be the fifth starter kind of in waiting right now. And I think Swarzak will get a lot of, you know, whatever they need, a fifth starter will get like kind of a bullpen day with Covey on that. And then I think it's going to be Cody Ashe, Sanchez, Leury Garcia, and whoever, whatever catcher is not playing, either Soto or Narvaez, is the bench. So it looks like the Sox are pretty well set, and, you know, could be a surprise. You know, Zach Birdie is still here. I don't think he's going to break camp with the team, but, you know, he's still in camp. And, there's Kevin Smith, the catcher, who was taken off the 40-man before camp, has had a great camp, and he's probably caught more innings than anyone in Arizona this spring. So he's shown himself well, too. But remember, they need a great catcher in Charlotte, too. That's probably not any solace to anyone who goes there, but, you know, that's where their future is, with Giolito and Lopez and Fulmer are part of their future. So I think things are, you know, now that the Borges trade came through, barring some sort of surprise, I think things are pretty well set up.
Yeah, you mentioned Giolito, Lopez, Fulmer, Michael Kopech down in probably double-A or single-A to start the year. But we've seen it before with the White Sox. I know you wrote a bit about this, where sometimes they transition guys to the big leagues via the bullpen initially. Is there a chance we could see that developmental path with any of those guys?
Yeah, even though you took a shot at my Michigan fandom, I do appreciate you reading my stuff, Anthony. That's always a good thing. Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I mean, it worked well for Burley. It worked well for Chris Sale. I mean, some people actually thought when they moved Sale to the rotation that they were, you know, moving away a lights-out, you know, kind of Mariano Rivera-type closer. Well, I don't know if there's anyone that's Mariano Rivera. But you know what I'm saying. You know, and Rodon had a little time there. So I could see it happening at some point. You know, both Lopez and Giolito worked a little in relief last year for the Nationals. Fulmer kind of struggled in relief last year, but I think he was a little ahead of his time kind of up there, and they just wanted him to get the work in with Don Cooper, which he benefited from. So it could happen. And, you know, the bottom line is they've really, you know, put together, as Rick Hahn loves to say, a critical mass of good, talented young pitchers, and there's only five spots in the rotation. So, you know, eventually some of these guys are either going to be traded, but more likely some of these guys may end up in relief. So, you know, even if they come up and pitch in relief and start at some point, you could see some of these guys playing critical roles at some point in the bullpen. So, you know, it all plays out. And as Rick Hahn said in that story, you know, you'd rather have a guy who can give you 200 quality innings over 80 quality innings a year. So they're going to let these guys start until they prove they can't be starters. But just because they come up and maybe relieve a little this year doesn't mean that the starting path is done. Quite the contrary. It could be, you know, their path to major league rotation.
All right, there you have it. The latest news and notes from Scott Merkin. And we are not done with Scott Merkin, because he's got a Q&A with new manager Rick Renteria on tap. We are going to air that now. And until next time, it's been MLB.com Extra, Chicago White Sox edition.
Well, I think we tried to, again, we tried to come together as a club, as a unit. We were trying to bond and trying to create an identity for ourselves. I think that was the biggest thing. I think being able to put these guys to get to know each other and come together as a team, which was one of the biggest things we were striving to do. But the identity and the purpose of us going out there and performing together and just kind of coming together as quickly as we possibly could. And I think we've done that. I think we've accomplished the idea that we play a game a certain way, that, you know, the name on the front of the jersey is more important than the name on the back.
Tim Anderson and the White Sox agreed to a multi-year deal. I mean, what can you say about this young man, and how does he kind of fit as a quiet leader moving forward? We know about his talent, but just kind of he seems to, even from last year to this year, seems to have not matured, but just kind of grown into the role quite a bit.
Well, I think, you know, as you continue to gain time at the major league level or gain time in any place that you're being seen a little bit more, you start to get comfortable with your surroundings. He's a person that went about it a certain way. He's come in quietly, gone about doing his business, prepares, knows what he needs to do, and has let his actions speak for him. And they've spoken loudly. I mean, he's defended. He's run the bases. He's had, you know, good at-bats. He's doing things on the diamond that speak for him. And I think that represent a quiet leadership. But as he continues to mature and as he continues to gain more and more time and continues to get to know his teammates, I think naturally there's a progression from being a quiet leader sometimes to being a little bit more vocal and being able to express himself in certain ways that touch his teammates in a positive way, that help them you know, continue to push them and continue to connect with each other as a team.
Final thing, if I'm talking to you in October, we're sitting here at the end of March right now, and I'm talking to you in October, and you have to look back, what would you say would be considered a successful season in 2000? What are some of the things you're looking for a successful season?
Well, playing clean baseball, obviously. Obviously, for us, it's still trying to contend. I know that we're not in, you know, as far as anybody's concerned, we're not, but you can't become contenders unless you talk about contending. And I think those are things that we talk about. I think those are things that are realistic. I think that teams win. I think that team play has a place still in this sport. I think that as long as everybody understands what role they have and how they contribute along the way, along that road, we give ourselves every single day a chance to win a ball game. Otherwise, why would we even want to go out there and play? If somebody's going to make the determination as to who's supposed to win or lose, well, then why play?
You like this group? I mean, from what you're
saying, I like this group. Listen, I like this group because first of all, they have talent. Secondly, because they're going about doing things the way they're supposed to be doing things. They're very energetic. They're enthusiastic. They're working hard. I think they're going out and just becoming kids again, playing a game at the major league level, which is played by men who are very gifted and talented. You have to have fun. You have to enjoy it. You can't be tense playing this game. It's a long season, but you also have to know that there's a purpose and a reason for everything you do. And I think these guys have kind of done a very nice job this spring in trying to put that together. I wish I had a crystal ball and I could guarantee every single thing that everybody would want me to say and hear. But I can say that for the most part, our focus has been on trying to go about doing the things that are necessary for us to give ourselves a chance to win, and that every single day, if we give that effort, we give that hustle, we give that preparation a chance, we have an opportunity to go out there and compete against anybody we play.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kashvents. This is our latest look at the Detroit Tigers, and I'm joined by Jason Beck, and we are at the tail end of spring training camp, opening day just a couple days away as we record this. So, kind of tying up some loose ends here, Beck. And obviously the greatest source of intrigue right now is the rotation. Anibal Sanchez to the bullpen. Matt Boyd is in the starting group. What do you make of just how that back end situation is shaken out? We talked recently about really helter-skelter camp for Anibal Sanchez, started out so poorly, you know, made an adjustment in his delivery that gave him good results. So I'm sure he's disheartened, even temporarily, by the move to the bullpen. But what are your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, I think in most any other situation, Sanchez would have gotten into the rotation. But the way Boyd pitched, especially with a 21-0 strikeout to walk ratio, you know, through up until the last start, you know, you couldn't keep him out. And on a team that's been talking about getting younger since the end of last year, and has been talking about trying to work younger guys into the mix, you couldn't hold Boyd back, really. He earned the spot, and I think it's a tough spot for Sanchez, and I know he's not happy about it, but I think for now, you try to make it work. I'll actually be intrigued to see if the role evolves. Right now, I think they're keeping Sanchez back there as an insurance starter, and he could be an injury away from getting a rotation spot anyway, and goodness knows with Zimmerman working his way back, and with Daniel Norris having a history of injuries, you don't know. But I think if you get past that, and if they start getting to the point where they feel comfortable in some of their other insurance options, then you can try to work Sanchez in some different roles. He's a guy who you could see him in shorter stints having a little bit more life on the fastball, and having an intriguing arm. I'll be curious to see how that evolves as we go along. Or, of course, we could just end up having a trade at the end of spring training and maybe all of it's irrelevant.
Well, there is always that possibility this time of year. A lot of movement happened on the bubbles of rosters, so to speak. So we'll see what transpires. But, I think Tigers people going into camp, if you would have told them that Boyd and Daniel Norris would pitch as well as they have, they'd be ecstatic because we all know that's the future for this, what could be a really good rotation. I mean, we saw the way Justin Verlander bounced back last season. Obviously, Michael Fulmer walks away with the Rookie of the Year. But to shore it up with the back end with two really encouraging young arms would really be special. And the offshoot of that is the roster moves this club has made. You know, Mike Pelfrey kicked to the curb in the middle of a two-year contract. In the bullpen, Mark Lowe, same deal. They cut him with 1 year and $5.5 million left. And Beck, it just seems like both of those moves just kind of speak to the sense of urgency here, where you got a club that really has to show something in the first half. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be, they're going to be hard pressed not to consider making some trades, off the major league roster. Now, how that market develops, we don't know. We know over the winter, you know, they had trouble, you know, getting returns they felt acceptable for their guys, but you know, it could very quickly shift to that conversation if things don't go well in the first half. I think you're seeing a real sense of urgency with the roster construction.
Yeah, I think, you know, if there was a little bit more patience, maybe you could have kept Pelfrey. But even Brad Ausmus, you know, a week ago was saying they were going to be hard pressed to try to fit two extra starters into their bullpen and have enough innings for them, which would, you know, kind of sounded like trouble for Pelfrey. The only way you could have envisioned him making the stats was going to be if Sanchez won a rotation spot and Boyd ends up in the minor leagues. And I think the way Boyd pitched, you know, kind of dooms Pelfrey, unfortunately for him. The bright side for him is that he gets a fresh start and maybe can get a shot somewhere else where the contract isn't an issue and he's not feeling like he's branded as a failed starter, you know? So it's, from that standpoint, I think it could work out well for him. Mark Lowe, it feels like we wrote about five or six different times where he'd made an adjustment and was hoping to get some of that lost velocity back on his fastball, maybe get some bite back into his pitches, and just it never seemed to stick. It might have worked for like an outing or two, and then he ended up back to square one. And you feel bad for it, and you hope it's not it, or this isn't the end. He certainly has enough times where he's looked out in his career and has found something and has worked his way back. But there are enough younger, better relievers in the Tigers' bullpen, as much grief as it gets, that Lowe is going to be hard-pressed to work his way back into it unless he really found something. And it didn't work out. So now it looks like the bullpen, by and large, is pretty well set with some younger arms. And you know, the transition has already started. And I think if, you know, depending on what happens early in the year, it'll be interesting to see if K-Rod struggles out of the gate, if maybe some other guys get injured, maybe Joe Jimenez gets a call, maybe Arsenio Leon gets a call, and we're talking about a bullpen in further transition.
Starting pitching, that was a good element of this camp. I guess if you had to highlight one negative element of camp, it's J.D. Martinez's injury. That's going to keep him out of the opening day mix. So what are the latest in terms of, you know, what his timetable is looking like?
Well, I think we're going to know more right around opening day. His foot is in a cast right now. He's hoping to get out of that right around the end of the week or early next week. And how he feels coming out of that should say a lot about how firm that timetable is going to be. Right now they're saying 3 to 4 weeks, about 10 days of which should be in spring training. So if it holds to that, then you're looking at mid to late April for a return. Although that's a timetable where you kind of have to wait and see if it's 3 to 4 weeks to return to baseball activity or if he can get back into game action. Once he gets back into game action, though, he's still going to need to catch up on spring training. And even he talked about it, that he's still going to have to get some at-bats in extended spring to where he's going to – you're probably looking at like a late April return at best. So they're going to have to fill that spot for a good few weeks. And it's going to be interesting to see how they do that in offense. Because it really does put a hole in the middle of the order, as deep as that lineup is.
Yeah, I think we went into camp, and the biggest roster question was center field, and then obviously Martinez's injury adds to the complexity of the outfield in general. As we record this, anything can happen. it's a fluid situation, but do you feel like, what you see is what you get in terms of the roster? Is there still a chance that some sort of external acquisition could be made?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a chance. But right now, you can see the door. And if there is a bright spot to this Martinez injury, it's a door opening for a guy like Jacoby Jones, who has a chance to, you know, if he can exercise some plate discipline and, you know, watch the strikeouts, has a chance to provide a jolt of athleticism to this Tigers lineup. He's really impressing people in camp, and he's really been able to show that he was really the best defensive option they've got in center, barring an acquisition from outside the camp.
And the big question, Beck, just as we go into opening day here, what is the outlook for this club? What are the chances of contending in the AL Central in your mind, having seen everything you've seen for the last 7 weeks out in Lakeland, Florida?
I think they still have a chance. I think getting through April without Martinez is going to be critical. I think they still need a lot of things to go right, especially on the pitching side. They need a healthy Jordan Zimmermann. They need Verlander to maintain what he was able to do last year. And they need some young guys in the bullpen to progress. But I think if they get things going right, it's a team that's got the talent to, at the very least, stick in the wild card race. If not, maybe give the Indians a little bit of a run if the Indians have a World Series hangover.
All right, there's the latest news and notes from Jason Beck, and we're going to keep the Tigers conversation going here because Beck had a recent sit-down with manager Brad Ausmus. We are going to air that now.
Right, you talked a little bit this spring about the mentality of the players having come so close to a playoff spot. What would you feel about the theme of camp and about what the players have, the approach they've taken into
it? I think overall the theme's been good. You know, we lost a lot of players in WBC, especially some core guys. But overall the theme's been a little bit more workmanlike, a little bit more businesslike. I think the players feel like we do have an opportunity, despite some of the naysayers, to make a run at a playoff spot and farther. So with that in mind, the guys have been going about their business of baseball in a very steady manner.
You've had a very interesting mix of young guys and veterans in this camp, kind of the intersection of almost two different generations of guys. Has that been a help? Do you think that's kind of benefited both sides a little bit?
Or I think young players can benefit from the level-headedness, calmness, consistency of veteran players. And I think veteran players can benefit from the energy of young players. So I think that it works both ways.
You've got all your guys back from the World Baseball Classic now. Do you have a feeling now of the vibe of this full squad and kind of getting all the ranks together? I'm kind of feeling like that this team, well, first of all, you came together healthy, but you also, you've got your lineup by and large together with the exception of JD.
Yeah, certainly losing JD for a month is not something we had planned for. We've yet to get Miggy back into the lineup at this point, although I think he should be in there maybe as early as tomorrow. And Kinsler is yet to play since he's been back. So I wouldn't say the cohesiveness is there yet. I think it'd be good to get all those guys on the field as a unit, playing together, in the lineup together, and hopefully the next six or seven games that'll be the case.
How impressive have you been with the young pitching you've been watching camp, especially with the guys vying for spots in rotation?
Well, Boyd and Norris have pitched outstanding. We've got a couple guys that pitch well out of the bullpen that are young too. And we got a battle for the fifth spot in rotation because Sanchez continues to pitch well also. So it's good to have that. It's good to have that type of depth. But we're going to have to make a decision here in short order.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Kansas City Royals. Our final look at the Royals here in spring training. Would have been a long camp out in Surprise, Arizona. But I think it's been a good camp. We're going to bring in Jeffrey Flanagan and talk a little bit about that as things wrap up. But Jeffrey, one reason I say it's a good camp is just the real pleasant development that's been Raul Mondesi, you know, his performance. I think in the context of, you know, you and I having these weekly powwows, it's not so surprising that he got the second base job. But you know, you look at the bigger scope of the picture, and this would have been a shocker if you had mentioned this at the beginning of camp that he would walk away with that second base job.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, he was, you know, just kind of a courtesy mention when we were talking about the battle for second base back in February. And he just rose up and just grabbed the job, which is kind of what you want to see in spring training. You want to see those surprises. And you want to see guys, you know, exert themselves and grab a position like that. And it certainly makes the Royals much more competitive, much more athletic at second base than they have been in recent years. So, and the other, you know, big picture thing is, you know, Alcides Escobar is going to be a free agent after this season. And if he does not get re-signed with the Royals, well, at least you have Mondesi, who's already got, you know, another year of experience in the major leagues. So he could easily transfer over to the shortstop position.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see a larger sample of of them, obviously, at the major league level. Another guy who's had a good camp is Alex Gordon, of course, coming off a tough year in 2016. And the interesting wrinkle there is it looks like he could be in the leadoff spot. And we know that Ned Yost has catered towards Alcides Escobar in that spot many times against the wishes of fans or sabermetric people, for that matter, because he certainly doesn't have the common on-base percentage of a leadoff guy. But for whatever reason, it worked for them for a long time. But it looks like Gordo might be in that spot.
Yeah, that's been pretty much determined. And we could get a sense of that early in camp because he actually went to Alex early in camp and said he was going to try that. And that's where Alex has really excelled over his career. If you look at his starts by batting order position, that's his OPS, I think, is something like 831 or something from the leadoff spot, which is the best spot for him. So he's done it a lot. I think he started 316 games over his career, which is more than he started any other batting position. And, you and I talk about batting position a lot and sometimes how it's overrated. But I think in Alex's case, he really likes hitting leadoff. He likes getting on base, setting the table for the other guys. And he's not, obviously not your typical leadoff hitter. He's not got great speed or anything, but he does see a lot of pitches. He can take a walk, and he knows how to get on base.
One guy we haven't talked much about on this podcast who's had a good spring is Brandon Moss. And now it's easy to talk about. He had a home run the other day, a ball that it went through a place where balls don't typically go in that ballpark. But it sounds like he's in a good place from the power perspective.
Yeah, he really is. He made a little bit of an adjustment with his head motion during his swing, and it really paid off in that final week. He really got locked in, and I think he had home runs in three consecutive games, and they were all no doubters, a couple doubles, and that home run you mentioned was here at Surprise Stadium, and it cleared the pavilion tent in right field, which in the years I've been coming here, I've never seen anyone do that, and coincidentally, it came right after Alex Gordon hit one out of the complex into the street, nearly hitting a cop car. So those were almost back-to-back. I think they were within one or two innings of each other, and quite a prolific display of power there. The wind now was blowing out that day, I'll say that. And as you know, Arizona, traditionally, a homer haven because of the thin air and everything like that. But, yeah, Brandon, right at the right time, too, getting locked in. And, of course, Ned Yost and his staff hoping that Brandon carries that into the regular season.
Jeffrey, a big storyline going into spring training camp was how do the Royals move on, not just emotionally, but purely from a baseball standpoint, from the untimely death of Yordano Ventura. Based on what you've seen here in spring training camp, how do you rate or how do you assess just the general state of the starting pitching depth? Because that seems like that's another area where it's been an encouraging camp.
Yeah, I think, they feel like this might be the deepest, strongest rotation they've had since Dayton took over in 2006. And I think that's a pretty good statement, a pretty strong statement. But the addition of Jason Hamill and with Jason Vargas coming back from his Tommy John surgery, and Nathan Carnes, a guy they picked up for Jerrod Dyson, and he won the number five spot in the rotation. He finished very strong down here, working primarily on his changeup, which has really become an effective pitch. So one through five, they feel pretty good about that, and their bullpen depth. It's going to look different, of course, without Wade Davis and Greg Holland around, but they still feel confident that, got young guys like Matt Strom and, got Mike Minor was finally into the mix, and he had a great spring. They feel like they got some depth there, and they obviously feel Kelvin Herrera can step in and be the new closer.
So we've talked about all the positives of camp. Is there anything in your mind that stands out as, I don't know how to phrase it, a disappointment or something that could be better or that stands out, yet to be assessed as the season starts? Where anything stand out in that regard?
Yeah, I think, Jorge Soler had kind of a disappointing camp even before he got hurt. And he's a guy that they got, of course, with Wade Davis, and still has a very high ceiling. Just had real trouble with his timing at the plate, and I think he only hit like 143 and 50 or so at bats, and started to pick it up a little bit late in spring, but then got hurt in a minor league game, strained his oblique muscle, and he's most likely going to be on the DL when the season opens. So fortunately for them, it's a grade one strain, which is the lowest, and it's really centralized. So they're hoping he can get back, 2 or 3 weeks at the most, and I would say that if there was any slight disappointment, it might be his performance this spring at the plate. I think he made strides defensively, but he just couldn't get his timing down.
So this will be a fascinating club going into the year. Of course, a lot of pending free agents, so we know that the Royals are one of those teams that it seems especially important to get off to a good start in the first half, lest the conversation start to shift towards, you know, are they going to move people and that sort of thing.
Right.
But it's also a very confident group, a group that's been there, done that as far as getting to October and extending through October is concerned. So I want your gut feeling, Jeffrey. I know you love this, being put on the spot. Not necessarily a tried and true prediction, number of wins or anything like that, but what's your gut feeling about the competitiveness of this club?
Well, I you brought up a good point about wanting to get off to a good start, and I think that's going to affect how they position their 25-man roster. You might see Terrence Gore actually make the 25-man roster because he's that kind of speed can actually win you one, two, maybe even three games in late innings in April. You might even see a Whit Merrifield up here over Christian Colon as a final guy on the roster spot just for that speed and athleticism. They really want to get off to a good start because I know Dayton and his staff don't want to be answering questions about, you know, are they going to have a fire sale in late July? So this is a group that still feels like they're not conceding anything to the Indians right now. They feel like, you know, the division can still be theirs, and they want to get back to the World Series one more time if it is the last hurrah for, you know, the remaining four potential free agents. So gut feeling is I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to get off to a good, strong start, and I think they're going to be competitive, and I think they're going to get back to the playoffs.
All right, we're going to keep the Royals conversation going here in the lead-up to opening day 2017. Jeffrey recently sat down one-on-one with manager Ned Yost. Here is that conversation.
Hi, Jeffrey Flanning of MLB.com here with Royals skipper Ned Yost. And Ned, every camp we talk about one or two surprises in camp, and who are those guys this year?
Well, we have had some, Flanning, for sure. You know, Raul Mondesi has been, you know, a really big surprise. We knew what kind of ability that he had, and, you know, coming up last year, you know, having a rough year offensively at the big league level. Handled all his duties defensively really, really nicely. But, I mean, he's come into camp a different guy, more confident, more self-assured, and has had a heck of a camp so far. I mean, he's hitting over 400. You know, he's done really, really well, and he's doing a lot of things well. He's hitting the breaking ball good, which he really struggled with last year. We all know that he's capable of, you know, handling the fastball, but he's been bunting. He's been playing tremendous defense. He's been a real pleasant surprise. Caramo and Culver have been big surprises. You know, we've had our eyes on, or at least I have, on Culver for the last couple of years. We've brought him up here as a fill-in guy, as an extra guy from our minor leagues, and I think he had three or four saves for us last year in spring training alone, and he's been very impressive. Caramo's been extremely impressive. Heavy ground ball guy, a heavy sinker, gets his fastball up to 94, really good slider, a real good temperament on the mound. So I'd probably say those have been the three biggest surprises that we've had out of you know, guys that when we got here, you know, not really knowing too much about, but really been impressed.
There's been a lot of talk this offseason about the Cleveland Indians, and rightfully so, they got to the World Series, but this is a very prideful group that's not going to concede anything. How do you guys think you match up with the Indians going into 2000?
Don't really care. Don't really think about it. You know, I think that we'll match up against anybody. I'm not just singling out any team. You know, I like our team. I like our depth. We've had, you know, guys, you know, really show up here in camp. And we talked a little bit about a surprise. And the other one I forgot was Bonifacio. So we've got tremendous depth. I think we're looking at guys like Scoglin, Stout, and Stamont, and some of these guys, McCarthy, that we've sent down early. We've got tremendous depth in the pitching department that we're comfortable with. We've got tremendous infield depth with guys like Arteaga, who's had a great spring, Torres, who's had a great spring. So we feel like our core guys are here. They're healthy. They're primed and ready to go. They're hungry. We've got great depth. If we have issues like we had last year with the injuries, I mean, the injuries hurt us last year. So we feel real good about matching up against anybody right now.
Perfect. Thanks, Ned.
You're very welcome.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Minnesota Twins, our last look at the Twins here in spring training. It's our last podcast before opening day with Rhett Bollinger. And Rhett,
First of all, I'm sure you're excited to get out of Fort Myers here soon. It's been a long camp because of the World Baseball Classic. But in these last few days, where do things stand? What's left to be decided in Twins camp?
Well, with the Twins right now, there's still kind of a lot to be decided in the sense. There's still, 36 guys in camp, which is definitely a lot here with, only a couple days left in camp. The big kind of things so far they kind of find out is the fifth starter competition still isn't quite over yet. We know it's going to be either Tyler Duffy or Adalberto Mejia. Mejia's probably outpitched Duffy overall, but Duffy's pitched a lot better recently. They both pitched in a minor league game a couple days ago, and Duffy pitched great, and Mejia struggled. So it kind of maybe might work in Duffy's favor. But the big thing is if Duffy doesn't win it, he would probably go to the bullpen, whereas if Mejia doesn't win it, he'll go to the AAA Rochester rotation. So also backup catchers look kind of up in the air, but it sure seems like Chris Jimenez is going to win that job as well. And in the back end of that bullpen, we don't know if the Twins are going to keep Rule 5 pick Justin Haley. It sure seems like they're going to try to keep him, whether or not it's going to be on the roster, maybe trade for him. We'll find out. Michael Tonkin is kind of on the bubble, and he's out of options. Otherwise, position player-wise, we kind of know what's going to happen here. I think Kenny Vargas' injury opened the door here for Byung-ho Park to be the opening day DH. A-Ray Adrianza's oblique injury has kind of opened the door to have Danny Santana and Eduardo Escobar be the backup infielders. There's still a couple questions here late in camp, but for the most part, just kind of waiting for some of these roster cuts because there are definitely still a lot of guys in camp this late.
Who would you say who or what was the biggest surprise of this camp?
I think the biggest surprise would have to be either how well Park played. You know, it was a tough, for him to get DFA'd right before the start of camp. I'm sure it wasn't easy mentally to kind of deal with that. But he came in and had the right attitude, and he's been their best hitter pretty much all spring. And Vargas is kind of the heavy favorite there at DH just because Vargas on the roster. But I think Vargas was hurt by the fact that he played in the World Baseball Classic and only got 9 at-bats. The other big surprise, I guess, to me would be Mejia. Mejia's really been sharp all spring outside of that minor league outing, putting himself in that, mix there because coming into camp, he was, a big long shot to make the rotation. But with, Trevor Mays, Tommy John surgery, and Jose Berríos, only pitching, six in the third innings in the World Baseball Classic, and he had to go to AAA to kind of get stretched out. He has kind of put himself on the map here. So even if he doesn't make the roster as a fifth starter, I think his status with the team has definitely gone up, where I think he may be the first guy called up, if not Berríos, if they need another starter.
I would have to guess, for a team, trying to establish itself in the rotation, the most unfortunate development of camp would Trevor May's elbow injury would have to rate pretty high on that list.
Yeah, I definitely would. I kind of had high hopes there for Trevor May. Just talking to him a lot at Twins Fest and early in the season, he's a good talker for sure. He's a really smart guy. And you could tell this was kind of his year, he thought. He kind of dedicated himself this offseason, not just physically but mentally to kind of, take that next step and be a starter again. He pitched in relief for the last year and a half with some success the first, year last year. A lot of strikeouts, but also, high ERA. Dealt with the back injuries and that kind of stuff, but he was finally healthy, with his back and everything. And sure enough, he pitched really well against Team USA, and sure enough, on one pitch to Andrew McCutchen, his UCL tears, have a full UCL tear. So he took it pretty hard, but I think he's trying to take it in stride. He's staying active on social media, a lot of posts about his rehab, that kind of stuff. So I think he's trying to keep the fans, engaged and involved. But definitely, that was definitely tough to do for the Twins.
Red, obviously, the Twins entered 2016 with high hopes and contention, come off a surprise 2015. Didn't work out so well, in large part because they got off to a horrendous start in April. They're really playing from behind from the very beginning. We know expectations are tampered down this year as a result, but I'd have to imagine, just getting off to a better start after an 0-9 last year is an emphasis for Paul Molitor this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of talking to some of the guys in the clubhouse, especially Brian Dozier. They want to get off to a good start. It's kind of one of those things. They haven't done that in a while. Even the year they were actually, a surprise in 2015, they had a tough start then as well. So I don't think they've won an opening day since, I think it's 2009. It's been a long time, even on opening day. But Dozier kind of said they don't want to put too much pressure on themselves to have a strong start. But at the same time, they know they kind of have to get off to win. It's because, if they get rid of a bad start again, really last year when they were 0-9, just kind of talking to a lot of the guys, it kind of seemed like the wind went out of their sails, As soon as the 0-9, they kind of realized, the season was almost over in a sense. It was going to be too tough of a kind of a hill to climb out of. So I think if they can get off to a better start, get some confidence, some optimism going, it would really help. It's such a young roster, too, as we know. If Byron Buxton, really struggles early on, maybe it'd be tough for him to kind of get out of it. Or, if he could start off hot, or Miguel Sano, can start up hot, maybe they can kind of build on it and build some confidence. Because this team has definitely gone through a lot here since 2011 with all these losing seasons. And I think, as you said, you know, I think last year there was a lot more optimism externally and a lot more, you know, projections they could maybe even be a surprise postseason team. This year, that's not really the talk. But some of the, you know, computer projections, that kind of stuff, still see them as a team that's going to really improve. It should at least, you know, some of the computers are saying they're going to win between 75 and 77 games, which I think for the Twins, they'd take that. I think they'd rather obviously have a better year than that and maybe be a surprise team like they were in 2015. But a lot of things have to happen. You know, we know that the rotation has got to really hold up. We know those young guys have to contribute. But, yeah, I think internally, I think the Twins believe they can, you know, have a solid season. But at the same time, there's so many ifs with this team that we'll kind of see how it goes.
I know you wrote a bit. We had all of our beat writers write a bit about what the trade deadline might look like for their club. You know, you mentioned this is a year geared more towards taking that next step forward with a young core. What do you think the trade deadline could look like for the Twins?
It kind of depends too on a hot start. You know, if they have another bad start, they're, you know, having a rough go at the deadline. You can see them kind of sell off some guys. You know, Brian Dozier talked about he doesn't want to be one of those guys kind of strung along, but you know, with how good he is and having, you know, 2 years left on his deal, he could easily be a trade candidate. As could Irvin Santana, other veteran guys, probably more like reliever type guys they signed this year, maybe Belisle or Breslow, if they're doing well at the time, could be flipped for younger assets. But for the most part, their core is still so young. You know, you wouldn't see them trading any of their young guys, really, obviously, in terms of, you know, all their young prospects and young players in that, you know, on the roster. And Maurer's not going to go anywhere, that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's going to be, you know, interesting. But last year, they at least, you know, were able to get Mejia as part of the trade for Eduardo Nunez. You know, even Hector Santiago is going to be part of this rotation. They got him. Trading Alaska and Alex Meyer. So it's definitely a way for them to kind of build for the future if they do become sellers. But they don't have too many assets outside of maybe Dozier and Santana, but both those guys actually would bring pretty good returns, especially Dozier.
All right, that's the latest from Rhett from Twins Camp. And Rhett also had the opportunity to catch up with manager Paul Molitor. We are going to run his Q&A with Molitor right now.
Here with Paul Molitor. Paul, last year obviously did not go to plan. What do you kind of maybe see in that spring that kind of gives a little more encouragement going into this year?
Well, I think that it's an understatement that yeah, last year didn't go as planned. You know, you try to not panic, even coming off a somewhat horrific season in terms of amount of losses that we endured. But, you know, you always try to incorporate your work in a given camp according to your personnel and things that are shortcomings of your club. So we've tried to instill confidence from the get-go, maybe a little bit of a renewed focus for some of the guys on what direction they want to go and what things they need to improve on. And overall, I've been pleased that we've addressed some of those things, I think, rather efficiently throughout the course of the camp. How it plays when you start the season, a little bit of, you can't predict guarantees on certain things, but I really feel a lot of the areas that hurt us last year we're going to be better at.
And how important is that young core going to be? Guys like Miguel Sano, you know, Jorge Polanco, Max Kepler, Byron Buxton, and Rosario.
We got a large group of young guys with less than 1,000 at-bats, and they're playing significant roles for us. So it's a little hard to predict the rate of incline on these guys with their skill sets, but, you know, we got a lot of confidence in all of them. We're just trying to make sure that we keep teaching them the right way to play and that they don't let, you know, a given day or maybe a tough week hinder them too much in terms of their confidence and what they bring each and every day. But it's a nice core to have. It's going to be fun to watch them develop as a unit as well as individually.
The rotation last year, we saw consistent Irvin Santana, but outside of him, a lot of inconsistencies. How confident do you have in guys like, you know, Phil Hughes bouncing back from injury, Kyle Gibson with his new kind of refined delivery, Santiago coming off the WBC and the starter?
You know, you need to have optimism there. It was a shortcoming for us for sure, the lack of innings, the lack of effective innings. You know, Irvin was great, consistent. You know, you're hoping that a guy like Phil can bounce back and be motivated by the fact that he didn't pitch much last year, and the year before was a bit of a struggle, so we're hoping he takes a step forward. Kyle Gibson is a guy that I've challenged. I just think that he's kind of leveled off here a little bit, and I think there's more in there. And we're just trying to find a way for him to use his ability as well as, you know, a little more fearlessness in how he pitches. I think we've seen that in the camp. Hector, we saw a little bit of good and bad last year. And, of course, we're still trying to figure out who the last guy's going to be. But, you know, I think the fact that we've competed well for that spot bodes well.
in the bullpen, some guys coming back from last year, guys like Brian Presley and Taylor Rogers, your closer and Brandon Kinsler, some new faces as well in Belisle and Breslow. What do you kind of expect from the bullpen this year?
Well, we're trying to assemble it. It's an important part of our game today, and you know, everyone's using it a little bit differently, but you gotta have you know, at least seven guys that you can trust to some degree, either to keep you in a game or hold on to a game or close a game. You know, Kinsler, you know, what he did, he certainly warrants the opportunity to do that here. We all think Presley's got high-end ability, still learning how to pitch later in games. Rogers was solid. We're looking for him to continue to improve. Belisle's been a great addition. Just his work habits, his routines, his competitiveness, his professionalism. And Breslow's little twist in how he's resurrected himself a little bit has played. So the questions still remain how we're going to fill out those last two spots. And probably looking for some length there. And, you know, a couple guys in unique circumstances, either option-wise or Rule 5-wise, some of the things that we have to look at.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.